Feels borderline bad taste to be thinking about journeys around the world as a form of self-discovery right now. But one such journey is the subject of New Zealand writer Fiona Sussman's new novel, Addressed to Greta. Buttoned-up Greta Jellings gets her life upended when left a staggering amount of money. Next stop, the world. Fiona Sussman spoke to Robert Kelly about the journey she went on with her protagonist.
Greta is a 39-year-old woman who lives in Auckland, and she lives a very small life. She struggles with social anxiety and really has spent most of her life trying to be the Greta other people would like her to be, most especially her mom, who has now passed by the time the book opens. But Greta lives in the shadow of her mother's doctrines, and they sort of dominate a large part of Greta's life.
What is that doctrine?
Well, her mother, Nora, has lived a life of disappointment, and so she really tries to encourage Greta not to dream. Her doctrine is kind of no expectation, no disappointment. And because of Nora's her own experiences, her whole drive in life is to be seen to live a respectable life. And so she certainly conveys that in all her advice to Greta. And she is a slave to approval, and Greta really becomes a slave to approval. And so there develops for Greta a disconnect between her own truth and the truth her mother peddles.
There's that word, respectability. Do you think that casts a much bigger shadow here in New Zealand than it does, for instance, in South Africa?
No, I don't think so. I think that the book and that idea of respectability probably taps into a universal truth, and it's possibly relevant at different times in the history of a country. So certainly when I was growing up in apartheid South Africa, you know, there was a very narrow norm peddled, you know, which was based on racism and prejudice. And I think many countries also, you know, created that norm, which excluded quite a number of people who maybe were of different sexual orientation. So I think each country brings its own notion of respectability, but there is that sort of graph, that mold that each country seems to demand as the perfect member of that country, and many other people are sort of forced to the periphery and navigate the margins because of it. So I don't think it's country specific, really.
How much of that is self-made? You know, building our own expectations of ourselves. It's like an invention that we do, but we place the onus on other people.
Yes, well, I mean, I think it's this whole notion, I guess, even of self-esteem is quite an interesting one. And I think that many people are raised where approval of society and those who operate it is paramount. And so, unfortunately, that self-esteem can be quite vulnerable because it can either be given as praise or taken away on a whim. Growing up with a sense of absolute inner acceptance and developing a sense of self-esteem from what one achieves is something, a goal I think many people strive for, but they don't always achieve. And I think possibly even well-intentioned parents sometimes overlay on their children their own fears and concerns. And so I think many people, I think there's Greta in a lot of us, where we're all sort of constantly seeking society's approval in some way or other. And in fact, our self-esteem is very much intimately tied up in that. And I think it's more pronounced even now with social media, where people present very curated lives, and it's really trying to present this artificial life that conforms to this ideal norm peddled by Western society. But what it does create is, you know, a huge amount of distress for most people who actually don't, their real lives are not like that. But, you know, so it enhances a sort of sense of social isolation and loneliness.
You can end up with a dysmorphia there, where you're comparing your own actual life to other people's curated versions of their lives.
Absolutely. I think that's right. And I think there are many of us who in some ways land up, feel like that we are living a lie, because we have kind of, there has been a disconnect between who, we, you know, many people, especially Greta in this instance, doesn't, and Walter, which of course he's moved beyond that, but don't really know who they are anymore, because they're so busy trying to be, well, Greta's trying to be the Greta everybody else would like her to be. So she makes multiple compromises.
Apart from Walter, of course, and we should introduce Walter. So yes. How does he appear in the novel, and how did he appear in your mind?
Right. Well, Walter, it's interesting, by the time the book opens, Walter has actually passed. So the challenge for me there was, because he has such a significant role on Greta's metamorphosis, I really needed to bring him alive to the reader. But Walter appears to Greta to, you know, she's socially awkward. She struggles with social anxiety. She's gauche. She's always reflecting on her behavior. And when she meets Walter, she's instantly put at ease. He feels so entirely comfortable in his, he seems so entirely comfortable in his own skin. He seems authentic. And most importantly, non-judgmental. He seems to kind of look beyond Greta's flaws. A lot of that comes from true empathy that he has, which we only really discover, the reader only discovers later, has come about because he himself has struggled to find his own identity. Walter, when Greta meets him and she falls instantly for him, only to learn that he is gay and HIV positive. And so, but still between them, this amazingly close and liberating friendship develops. And Walter, the parting gift he gives her is something he hopes will offer Greta a gateway to self-discovering.
And what he gives her is both money and a challenge.
Yes, well, it's a self, it's a very meticulously planned trip or adventure of indeterminate time, and also where the itinerary is maintained as a mystery. So the money facilitates that, but inherent in this gift is uncertainty, because for Greta to embrace it, she has to leave behind the world she, as she knows it, the familiar, the safe. And she spends so much time in her head planning, reflecting, anticipating, that it's for her that is just a massive challenge to actually head into the unknown, not really knowing where she's headed. And he's almost demanding of her to be like a young child, and that is to live in the moment, for the moment. And in that way, he's hoping to, you know, let her actually start to find herself and discover herself again.
The book felt to me like an attack on safety. Do you think that feeling safe can become oppressive?
Look, no, I don't. It's interesting because I don't think, I think attacks, of course, that's quite a powerful thing to feel. I think more than, you know, and I think there are people who live in various ways in a safe life. I think when a safe life is stifling, when it's, when you're trying to have too much control over that life, then I think that is where there is a problem. And I think we do, as the, certainly in cities even, you know, we have the sense of being in control, and it's only when something like an earthquake or a natural disaster hits that we actually are humbled and realize actually we're not so much in control. And the relief that comes about from realizing you can cope with life's vicissitudes even if you're not entirely prepared, and you don't have, you know, all the armor ready to cope and fight off uncertainty, is actually probably a real boon if you can get to that point. Look, we all, some people gravitate more to a safe life than others, and certainly I know for myself, I think I completely missed out on that adrenaline gene when it was being handed out. But I think that more than an attack on safety, it's just encouraging people to have the courage to be seen, to live a bigger life. And sometimes being seen comes with its own challenges and fears and lack of safety. But to live a bigger life, you actually have to dream, and you have to stand up and be seen, even if that comes with some danger.
And you've had to give up control a couple of times as well. It must have been a big move, moving from apartheid South Africa to New Zealand in the 1980s.
Look, it was more love than I fell in love with my husband, who was he wasn't my husband at the time, and he was coming over to New Zealand. I had always been very passionate about my country and hoping that change would come about. And certainly, you know, had grown up never proud to be a South African because of what it inevitably meant. And so when I shifted country, I shifted because I was really following my husband to be, and I was madly in love with him. And I do remember arriving in this, I didn't really know even where New Zealand was on the map at the time. Definitely something about taking each day as it came. And because I had so few expectations, I literally had to live in the moment. But for me as well, it was a huge relief to be able to, in some ways, cast aside the awfulness of that regime, because I think being born into it, and even if one, you know, did everything in one's power under the regime to rebel against it, as my family and my parents were very much anti-apartheid, and, you know, my GP, who actually was my inspiration for becoming a doctor myself, was an incredible man. He was very involved in challenging the government when detainees died in custody and demanding, you know, alternative postmortems. And so, and my university was very much, you know, involved in that struggle. So whilst one could do things, it was always within a limit, unless you were going to be a terrorist or a freedom fighter. And so in some ways, arriving in this beautiful little country where I was asked as I came through customs, not if I was carrying any hand grenades or firearms, but whether I had any Christmas cones or seeds. And I thought the customs officer was joking. And it was a wonderful realization to actually suddenly have that huge weight and responsibility of such an appalling regime in some ways lifted off one's shoulders.
That's Fiona Sussman speaking with Robert Kelly about her new novel, Address to Greta, is published by Bateman Books.